thank Dov Simons and his Chalkeinu Initiative, which has really sponsored this morning's event, from the food and from our speaker, and in general the seed program and the Northeast and its involvement over here as well. We appreciate it, Dov, and thank you very much. Also want to mention that this is particularly done in memory of Rabbi Michael Stern, who's just nifter, tremendous loss for our community. Whoever is zocha to know Rabbi Stern knew his impact and the life that he brought, the vitality that he brought to anyone who met with him, and the tremendous chesed and Arbat Torah that he did, kiruv that he's involved in. It's a tremendous loss for our community. Mr. Hashem, our learning this morning should be zchus v'ris neshama. Also, just want to mention before we get started that we have coming up soon, Monday, July 8th, we have a special women's learning program where we're going to hear from Shoshana Kay. This is an event for women, particular event for women's being held in my house. Again, sponsored by the Chalkeinu Initiative, by Dov Simons, and should be an exciting event. So, without further ado, just want to introduce Rabbi Daniel Stein. Rabbi Stein comes to us from Yeshiva in Reitz, Yeshiva University, and he goes to Blatchia there, and he teaches in the Smicha program. He's a Rav in Manhattan. So I guess with the title, the Shir, being "Are All Rabbis Created Equal?" So I don't know, but potentially we could say even if it is, but at least some rabbis are equaler than others. And we have the opportunity to hear from a rabbi who is somewhat more equaler. And it's a tremendous chus for us, and we should all give our attention. Again, continue eating, but give our attention to Rabbi Stein. Thank you very much.
I wanted to thank Rabbi Goldstein, Marta Asher, Shlita, and Dov for inviting me to share with you some Divrei Torah here this morning, perhaps Me'inyana D'Yoyma, relating to this week's parasha. They tell a joke about a new Rav who starts in a shul, and his first Shabbos in the shul is Shabbos Mevorachim Rosh Chodesh Av. And they ask him, there's a machlekes breaks out, as want to happen in shuls, should we say Avarachimim, Shabbos Mevarchim Rosh Chodesh Av? Typically, on a Shabbos Mevarchim, we don't say Avarachimim, but it is Av. So a machlekes broke out. Said, oh, we have a Rav now, let's go ask the Rav. So he went over to the Rav. He said, should we say Avarachimim, Shabbos Mevarchim Rosh Chodesh Av? So the Rav said, it's two minhagim, which is the truth. So he said, what's the minhag of the shul? So they didn't remember. So he said, well, let's ask one of the older members of the shul. He went over to one of the older members of the shul. He said, what's our minhag? Do we say Avarachim Shabbos Mevarachim Rosh Chodesh Av? So he said, do we skip it? He says, no, we never skipped it. He says, oh, so we say Avarachim Shabbos Mevarachim Rosh Chodesh Av. He said, no, we didn't say it either. He said, we didn't skip it and he didn't say it. What was it? The minhag was we fought about it every year. That was the minhag. And a little bit by all of Klal Yisrael, part of what it means to be part of Klal Yisrael is a little bit, we have a Mesorah of Machlokes. We have to know how to formulate an argument. It's part of what it means a little bit to be part of Jewish culture. In fact, how do we greet each other every time you see somebody? So we say, of course say good morning. Someone else responds good morning. But, when Jews greet each other, you're supposed to say Shalom Aleichem. What's the appropriate response? Aleichem Shalom. Which is unusual. I say you good morning, you respond good morning. I say how are you? You should say how are you, not you are how. Why do you reverse the order of the words? I say Shalom Aleichem, and you say you are how. Morning good. You reverse the order, and perhaps it's because Jews, when we meet each other in the morning, we have to have a machlekes. I say Shalom Aleichem, you say Aleichem Shalom. We disagreed. Now we can get beyond that. Let's get on with our day and have get along. So we have to have a little bit. We have as part of part of our culture, knowing how to formulate an argument and a healthy disagreement. And certainly, with regards to the development of halacha, machlokes is a critical ingredient. In fact, there isn't a daf in the Gemara that doesn't contain within it machlokes. There's almost no prakim of mishnayos that don't have machlokes in it. In fact, the Beis Yosef quotes in the name of the Ra'ah that the reason why we say at the end of Karbanos every morning the perek in Masechta Zvachim, of Mishnayos, of Ezehu Mekoyman, is because it's the only perek in all of Shas Mishnayos that has no disputes. But in every other perek of Mishnayos, there's disputes, every page of the Gemara, multiple disputes. So it clearly is part of our tradition to have, as part of the development of halacha, it helps the development of halacha to have disputes. It helps us hone and refine our arguments and understanding of the mitzvahs. So in that context, we need to understand why is it that the opinion of Korach in his machlokes with Moshe Rabbeinu is so emphatically and completely and utterly rejected. How is it different than all of the other disputes that take place at every page of the Gemara and throughout every perek of Mishnayos? And to be sure, machlokes between Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu was not a petty or personal machlokes where people's feelings got hurt. Clearly, there was a personal agenda that was, lingering beneath the surface. However, it was a fundamental and conceptual, intellectual, theological machloikas. And this is apparent from the Mishnah in Masechtas Avos, which you have over here in your first source, which tells us, Kol machloikas shehi l'shem, we'll get to the second part in a minute, but Ezehu machloikas, the first part in a minute, Ezehu machloikas shehi l'shem shamayim, what is a machloikas that is for the sake of heaven? It is positive, Zu machloikas hilo v'shamayim, machlokas between Hillel and Shammai. V'she'enu l'shem Shammayim, and that is not for the sake of heaven, zu machlokas Korach v'adoso. Machlokas between Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu. However, from the very fact that the Mishnah compares Hillel and Shammai to Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu is striking. And in fact, Rabbi Yerucham asked in the Sefer Das Torah, in his first piece over here on Parashas Korach, how could the Mishnah put the two together? Korach is one of the most infamous, despicable individuals in all of Jewish history. And Hillel and Shammai are heroes, champions of the Messiah. How could we put the two together in the same Mishnah? Rabbi Yerucham explains that it must be because Korach's dispute with Moshe Rabbeinu was not a personal or petty machlokas. In a certain sense, it was similar to the machlokas between Hillel and Shammai, which is a fundamental, conceptual machlokas about ideas and theology and how we should practice the mitzvahs. And similarly, the machlokas between Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu was also an ideological and theological machlokas about how we should practice the mitzvahs, and that's why it deserves to be mentioned in the same breath, in the same Mishnah, as the machlokas between Hillel and Shammai. This also seems to be the indication of the second source over here, the Gemara Masechtas Sota, which tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu was lobbying at the beginning of Parshas V'eschanan to enter into Eretz Yisrael, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu cuts him off in the middle. It says, Rav Loch, al toisiv daber elai od badavar hazeh. Please stop asking me to enter into Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to hear your tefillos anymore. Vilna Goyen actually comments, had Moshe Rabbeinu continued to daven, he would have compelled HaKadosh Baruch Hu to let him into Eretz Yisrael. Because the Zohar HaKadosh tells us any time we use the word na, please, in a tefillah twice, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is compelled to answer our tefillah. That's why when Moshe Rabbeinu davens for Miriam, he says, Kel na, refa na la. He uses the word please twice. Whenever you use the please twice, it's a magical formula that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is guarantees to answer such a tefillah. So Moshe Rabbeinu initially said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ebra na ba'artecha, please let me into your land. And he was about to use the word na again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cut him off. Said, Rav Loch, enough, you've had enough. Al Toysef Dabar Elai Oid Badavar Azeh, please don't use the word no again, because then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have been obliged to answer his tefillah. However, the Gemara says in Masech L'Soita, why was Moshe Rabbeinu spoken to in this fashion? Why did he deserve to be cut off? So the Gemara says, as it was as a punishment, because of the way that he spoke to Korach. When Korach, asked for a greater role in the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Moshe Rabbeinu told him, Rav Lochem B'nei Levi, you have enough. And since Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Korach in that fashion, Moshe Rabbeinu was spoken to in that fashion as well. But why was he punished for, cutting off Korach in the middle of his rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu? He was doing the right thing. So why was he punished for that response? And Reb Chaim Shmuel Levis explains in the Sichas Musar that it's because Korach wanted a greater relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what he was arguing for. He wanted a she'ifa for ruchnius. He wanted more spirituality. And Moshe Rabbeinu told him, Rav Lochem, no, you have enough. Says of Chaim Shmuel Levis, that's the wrong attitude. We never have enough in terms of our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We can always want more. And Korach was really coming in that sense from a positive attitude. He wanted to have a greater relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, even though he went about it in a seriously wrong way, but that was coming from the right place. It was an ideological and conceptual machlokas, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu responded in a way, you know, by cutting him off and saying, you know, you have enough, was the wrong kind of response. Similarly, perhaps that's why Moshe Rabbeinu felt it was necessary to daven to Hashem, Al tefen el minchasam, please don't accept the karbanos, the mincha of Korach. Korach was waging a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu, the authority within Klal Yisrael. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to, why did he suspect that the Ribbono Shel Olam might even accept the karbanos of Korach in the first place, that he had to daven Al tefen el minchasam? Don't accept their karban. So Yecheskel Sarno, who was Rosh Hashiva in Chevron, writes in his Sefer Delios Yecheskel, that is because, again, Korach was coming from the right kind of attitude. He wanted a greater relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. He had a she'ifa for Ruchnius, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that the Ribbono Shel Olam might actually accept his karban. Because it was an ideological machlokas. It was a conceptual, fundamental machlokas in halacha. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu needed to daven to the Ribbono Shel Olam not to accept his karban. The Chidah, in his commentary in Masechtas Avos, the Chasdei Avos, creatively suggests that perhaps Hillel and Shammai, Korach and Moshe, are mentioned in this same Mishnah, in the same breath, because they actually had the identical machlokas with one another. The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Yevamos, commenting on the Pasuk in Parashas Mishpatim, Acharei Rabim Lahatos, when adjudicating matters of halacha, we follow the majority. This is a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, how to interpret that pasuk. The opinion of Beis Hillel was that we follow the majority of opinions, a numerical majority. And since Beis Hillel outnumbered Beis Shammai, they felt the halacha should be established like them. However, Beis Shammai interpreted the pasuk not Acharei Rabim Lahatos, we follow the numerical majority, we follow those who have the majority of wisdom, who are Mechadah Ditvei. And Beis Shammai felt since they were smarter, they had a greater wisdom than Beis Hillel, they were sharper, halacha should follow them, even though they were outnumbered. And similarly, says the Chidah, that was the machlokas between Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu. Korach says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Rav Lochem. He says, you might have the numbers, he says to Moshe Rabbeinu. You might outnumber us. However, halacha does not depend, is not adjudicated based on a numerical majority, but rather on a majority of wisdom. And Korach felt that he was mechada ditvei, he was perhaps sharper than Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's why the halacha should perhaps follow him. But however we interpreted it, clearly from the fact that the Mishnah in Masechtas Avos places these two things in the same breath, the machlokas Hillel and Shammai, compares and contrasts to the machlokas of Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu, clearly this was an ideological, conceptual, fundamental machlokas about how to practice the Torah and the mitzvahs. And therefore we need to understand within the general rubric a context of our, you know, having a machlokas on every daf in the Gemara, every perek of Mishnayos, it's full of machlokas. Why is the opinion of Korach not given that same kind of validity? Why is it so emphatically and completely and utterly rejected? And I believe that in order to understand this, we have to take a step back and reanalyze perhaps the first clause in that Mishnah, which begins, Kol machlokas shehi l'shem shamayim, sofa lehiskayim. V'she'enu l'shem shamayim, ain't sofa lehiskayim. Any machlokas, which is l'shem shamayim, will endure. Any machlokas that is not l'shem shamayim will not endure. What does it mean that the machlokas will endure? And why is that something that we want? In fact, according to the neighbor of Yisrael Salanter, that a machlokas, sometimes that's l'shem shamayim, is worse than a machlokas she'enu l'shem shamayim. Why is that? Because a machlokas, it's l'shem shamayim, nobody can give in. When you have a personal machlokas, someone could be the bigger person and give in. But when you have a machlokas that's l'shem shamayim, about ideology, or about serving the Ribbono Shel Olam, I can't give in, I can't forget. How can I give in? It's not my covet. It's the covet of the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm here doing God's work. I have no right to give in. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter once commented that sometimes a machlokas that's l'shem shamayim endures because no one can ever give up, no one can ever be mochel, so it continues on forever. A personal machlokas that's not l'shem shamayim is sometimes not sofer l'hiskayim, which is a little bit better. However, clearly the Mishnah means this as a positive statement. A machlokas that's l'shem shamayim endures, and that's something that's positive. Why is that? Why is a machlokas it's l'shem shamayim in Duah? Why is that a positive? And a second question that's dealt with by the Mefarshim, which perhaps could give us a clue to addressing the larger issue that we began with, is if the Mishnah continues, Ezehi machlokas l'shem shamayim, again Hillel and Shammai, as opposed to Korach va'adoso. However, again, the Mefarshim note that there's somewhat of an inconsistency in the Mishnah. In comparing the machlokas, discussing the machlokas Hillel and Shammai, both parties are mentioned. As opposed to the machlokas between Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu, only one of the parties are mentioned. Why is there this disparity? So some Mefarshim suggest, well, Moshe, it's because only Korach was Shalol L'Shem Shamayim. He had a personal agenda. However, Moshe Rabbeinu was indeed L'Shem Shamayim. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned together with Korach. Well, some say, no, it's because Korach, the hallmark of machlokas that's not L'Shem Shamayim, is when one can't even acknowledge that there's another side to the argument. And Korach couldn't even fathom that Moshe Rabbeinu had any legitimacy at all. He refused to legitimize his argument. So that's what made him a machlokas she'eino l'shem shamayim, is that he only thought that there was one side to this machlokas. However, these two problems persist. Number one, why is Moshe Rabbeinu not mentioned? The other party in this dispute is not mentioned. And number two, why is it that, why is it better? What is the advantage of machlokas she'eino l'shem shamayim that it endures? And why is that something that we want? So the Magen Avos writes in his commentary, one of the later Rishonim, writes in his commentary, Masechta Sofos, the following explanation. He says, a machlokas es l'shem shamayim, we begin at the beginning of the Mishnah, the first clause, machlokas es l'shem shamayim es sofa l'skayim. What that means is that both opinions will be preserved. And this is based on the concept that the Gemara has in Masechtas Erevin. After discussing all of the disputes between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, the Gemara concludes, Yotza Basko, at the end, in the middle of the second line of over here of Os Dalet, V'yamru Eilu V'yelu Diver Elokim Chayim. These and those are the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Both Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. What does that mean? They're both the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So at a minimum, what that means is, what the Nesivos explains in his Hakdamat HaChoshim Mishpat, is that it means that they're both considered to be Limurat Torah. They're both the word of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not Bittul Torah to study the opinions of Beis Shammai, even though we happen to paskin like Beis Hillel. And he gives a mashal to this. He compares it to a person who goes fishing for oil, for pearls. So he says, you pull up one oyster, no pearl. Second oyster, no pearl. Third oyster. 15 oysters later, he finally gets a pearl. Okay. Would anybody suggest that the first 15 oysters was a waste of time? No, that's the process that you have to go to in order to find the one oyster that has a pearl. So it says in Asivas, what Eilu v'Eilu Divel Kim Chayim means, these and those are the words of Hashem, what it means is we have a process that we have to go through to arrive at the truth. But that doesn't mean that the process is a waste of time. The Shaka V'Tariya V'Gemara, the back and forth until we get to the conclusion, is not Bittul Torah. It's all part of the process of figuring out what the truth is. And therefore, as well, says in Nesivos, that's what it means. Eilu v'eilu divrei Elokim Chayim, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, even though we paskin like Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai are clearly part of the process, and therefore is certainly considered to be Limud HaTorah to study the opinions of Beis Shammai. If anything, I would compare it to to Dinim Derabbanan. The Gemara asks in Masechtas Shabbos, how do we say a bracha on lighting Neros Chanukah? Neros Chanukah is a mitzvah midrabbanan. How then can we say Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu? Hashem commanded us in mitzvos, and then we light Neros Chanukah. Hashem didn't command us in Neros Chanukah. That's a din derabbanan. So Gemara says it's based on the pasuk in Parsha Shoftim that losasim in adavar sheyagidu lecha yaminu smol. We should not diverge from that which Chazal tell us to the right or to the left. We have to follow the instructions of Chazal. However, the Ramban writes in his commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvos that cannot mean that every din derabbanan we should treat, rabbinic enactment, we should treat the same as a din midoraisa. If we would treat it the same as a biblical law, so just like when we have a doubt with regards to a biblical law or a din midoraisa, we have to, be machmir, we have to, do it again. So then so too, every time we have a doubt with regards to a din derabbanan, we should have had to be machmir as well. But of course, that's not our rule. The rule is, safek derabbanan lekula. So therefore, says the Ramban, it can't be that every din derabbanan is treated as a din midoraisa. What then does the Gemara mean that Chazal have the authority to legislate based on the pasuk of Lo Sasim in Hadavar, Asher Yagidu Chayuminu Smo? So Rabbi Yochanan calls in the name of Rabbi Chaim that what it means is that every din derabanan, once it's legislated, has the status of a din midoraisa with regards to limud ha-Torah. It's considered to be, part of the literature of Torah midoraisa, even though it doesn't have the same authority, the same weight. In a doubt, we would be lenient, but it's certainly not bittul Torah to study dinim derabanan because they have such authority to legislate based on those sasim and adavar sheyagidu l'chol yamin u'smol. So too here, even though at a minimum, when the Gemara says elu v'elu divar v'kim chayim, these and those are the words of Hashem, it's certainly Talmud Torah to study the opinions of Beis Shammai. However, the Ritvan is commentary on that Gemara Mesechtas Erevin, I gave it to you over here, the fifth source, says no, it really means much more than that. What it means is, he quotes in the name of the Chachmei Tzofas, that what it means is that both perspectives, both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, have elements of truth to their position. And this is based on the comment of the Gemara Masechtas Chagiga, which tells us that, commenting on the Pasuk in Parashas Yisro, in the introduction to the Aseres HaDibros, that the Pasuk says, "Vaydaber Elokim eskol hadvarim ha'ele." Kadosh Baruch Hu spoke all of these things. And the Gemara says what that refers to is that when we receive the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu, got the Chumash, the Torah, and certain traditions, halach l'moshe misinai, and principles, rules about how to derive halachas from the Chumash. The Yud Gimel Midos, Shatoran addresses by him, the 13 principles of deriving halachas. And there are legitimate ways, and there could be legitimate disputes in how to apply the Yud Gimel Midos, Shatoran addresses by him. Beis Shammai might apply it one way, and Beis Hillel might apply it another way, based on their perspective, but both could in fact be legitimate applications of the Yud Gimel Midos Shetoron addresses for him. And Vayidaber Elokim es kol hadvarim ha'ela leimor, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us all of these things, included both perspectives, both applications, that of Beis Shammai and that of Beis Hillel, both therefore have elements of truth to them. And this is echoed by the Rambam as well in his Hakdama, in his introduction to the Perush HaMishnayos. But the Rambam asks, why is it that we have so many disputes on every page of the Gemara and every parak of Mishnayos? Why are there so many arguments? So he quotes from the opinion of the Gaonim, which he disagrees with. The opinion of the Gaonim was that it's because we forget. It's a human condition, right? We forget. So he says, really, Hashem gave us everything at Maimed Har Sinai, the entire Torah in its complete form, but we forgot. And that's why the disputes developed. And they prove their position from a well-known passage in the Talmud Yushalmi, over here, Osei, it seems to be misnumbered, which is my fault, but over here, Osei, the Talmud Yushalmi tells us, Kol mash Talmud Vosik Osei L'chadesh, anything that a Talmud, Chacham, will originate, will develop in Torah, was already revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. We were given the Torah in its complete form. But what happened? So it says, the Gemara says in Masechta Sanhedrin, the very next source, that Misha Rabu Talmidei Shammai VeHillel, when there became the schools of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel began to enlarge, Nisrabe Loshim Shu Kol Tzarkan, they didn't learn properly, and Rabu Machlokas B'Yisrael, they didn't understand Hillel and Shammai properly, and that's why so many disputes developed. But it all developed as a result of forgetfulness. We forgot. And the Rambam says that that cannot be the case. That's not why we have so many disputes in the development of halacha, because the Rambam brings another well-known passage, the Gemara Masechtas Menachos. Over here, Osud Beis. The Gemara says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was writing the Torah in Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked him to write crowns on the top of the letters. And Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you making me do this? Mima akiv al yadcha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, no, because there'll be a Talmud Chacham generations later, Rabbi Kiva, who will derive tilei tilim shal halachas, reams and reams of halachas, from these crowns. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'd like to see that. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu transported Moshe Rabbeinu into the classroom of Rabbi Kiva. But the Gemara says that he didn't understand anything, the discourse that was taking place. And he became depressed. Chol Shadaito. He said, what happened over here? He didn't understand anything. Until he heard the words, Halach LaMoshe MiSinai, and he was Nisyash Vadaito. He calmed down. However, the Rambam asks, how could it be Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand what Rabbi Kiva was talking about? If we received everything at our Sinai and nothing developed afterwards, so Moshe Rabbeinu should have known exactly what Rabbi Kiva was talking about. How could it be he didn't understand him? So it says the Rambam therefore concludes, must be the Rambam at Har Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai received the Chumash. He received Halach L'Moshe Misinai, certain traditions, and he received the Yud Gimel Midos, the guidance, the rules about how to derive new halachos from the Chumash. And there are legitimate applications, there are different perspectives about how to apply those rules, and they could all be legitimate. But Moshe Rabbeinu was not given that at Har Sinai, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand the Shir of Rebbe Akiva. Maral explains in his comments in the Be'er HaGoa, he wasn't concerned that he didn't understand. It's not like he was waiting to hear his name, right? And then he said, they're still talking about me. And then he calmed down. He thought they weren't even applying the same rules that he was given. He thought they went off the rails. Then he heard, no, Halakha L'Moshe Misinai. He heard that they quoted one of the traditions he received at Har Sinai, and then he was relieved. However, the Maral explains that what the Yerushalmi told us, that everything that was given to every Talmud Chacham will develop later on throughout the generations, and Halakha was already revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Har Sinai means in potential. It was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. If a Talmud Chacham applies the Yud Gimel Midah Shetorah Nedreshes Bahem properly, so then that is all traced back to the rules, to the guidelines that Moshe Rabbeinu was given in Har Sinai, but it really developed afterwards. And therefore, there could be Elu V'Elu Dil Elokim Chaim. There could be these and those could both be the word of the Ribbono Shel Olam, could both have an element of truth to them, because you could have different Talmid Chacham with different perspectives that will legitimately apply the Yud Gimel Midah Shetorah Nedreshes Bahem in different ways. And this concept actually has halachic ramifications. The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Brachos, if you look all the way down, Ost Hezayin, in the context of the first Mishnah Masechtas Brachos, which talks about how late can one daven Maariv. The opinion of the Chachamim in the Mishnah is one is only supposed to daven Maariv until 12 o'clock, Chatzos HaLayla, midnight. The opinion of Shimon Gamliel is one can daven Maariv all the way until Alos HaShachar. We really passing like the Chachamim. You're supposed to daven Maariv before midnight. Some in Yonim after midnight, but it's really supposed to be before midnight. However, the Gemara says in Masechtas Brachos that if one is caught in a pickle, it's a shasat chak, Kedai hu Rav Shimon Begamliel, who disagrees, you could daven Maariv all the way to the morning, lismochalav v'shasat chak. You could rely on the opinion of Rav Shimon Begamliel to daven all the way until the morning. But if we don't paskin like him, why can I rely on the opinion of Shimon Gamliel if I'm in a pickle? If we don't paskin like him, we don't paskin like him. So explains the Mishkan of Yaakov in his comments in the Gemara Masechtas Brachos that it's because of based on this principle of Elu V'Elu Diver Elokim Chayim. Even in the positions that we reject, we acknowledge that there is an element of truth as long as the Talmid Chacham who developed that position, those members of Chazal, legitimately applied the principles and the guidelines that we were given to derive halachas. They could both have an element of truth, and therefore, if one is caught in a difficult situation, Kedai hu Rav Shimon lismochalav b'shasat chak. We can sometimes rely upon him. This is all based on that principle of Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. So now, says the Rashbaz, looking back at that Mishnah, now we understand why Kol Machlokas Shehi L'Shem Shamayim Sofa L'Hiskayim will ultimately endure. Both Hillel and Shammai endure. What does that mean? It means that we apply the principle of Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. These and those are the words of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Both have elements of truth to it, and therefore they will both continue to endure. That's what it means, Sofa L'Hiskayim. They both have elements of truth. But then why is a Machlokes not, that's not L'Shem Shammayim, why is a Machlokes, Korach and Moshe, there we would not say it's Sofa L'Hiskayim? Because even though there are legitimate disputes with regards to the development of halacha between Hillel and Shammai, there are limits to when we will apply Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. These and those are the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For example, if you flip the page, Rashi writes in the Masechtas Ksubas that when two Amoraim or two Tanoim had an original dispute about how to apply the Yud Gimel Midah Shetorah Nedreshes Bahem, the 13 principles we were given to derive halachos. So then we say, Elu V'Elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. But these and those are the words of the Ribbono Shel Olam, both have elements of truth to it. However, if let's say, sometimes you have this in the Gemara, and two Amoraim, two of those of later generation, are disagreeing as to what a Tana meant. One of the opinions that appears in an earlier source in the Mishnah meant. So Rashi says, no, there we don't apply Elu V'Elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. These and those are the words of Hashem. Because that's not a machlokas, that's not a dispute how to apply the principles that were given to us from Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, how to derive halachos from the text of the Chumash. That's a machlokas. What did Rameyer mean? What did Rav Yehuda mean? What did this Tana mean? Well, he either meant this or that. He didn't mean both. He's not the Rabbeinu Shalom has the elements of truth to both opinions. He either meant one or the other. Couldn't have been both. So therefore, Rashi says, when we're discussing what did someone mean, we can't apply the principle of Elu V'Elu, Diver Elu Kim Chayim. That's why the Chafetz Chaim, in his biography, they quote in his name, that he said that we don't apply Elu V'Elu, according to the name of Chaim Brisker, that we don't apply Elu V'Elu, Diver Elu Kim Chayim, in contemporary times. Why? You know, it's such a nice principle. These and those are, you know, the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They both have elements of truth to it. Why don't we apply it in contemporary times with regards to disputes among more contemporary poskim? So I believe what Reb Chaim is telling us is that it's because in contemporary times we rarely have an original dispute. We have a machlokas. What did the Rambam mean? We have a dispute, what, you know, and more contemporary. What did Rav Moshe mean? What does the Ramban mean? What does Sam Sofer mean? So we rarely have an original dispute about how to apply the Yud Gimel Mido Shaton addresses by him, the guidelines about how to derive halachos. We're arguing about what did people mean. So therefore, it couldn't be that they meant both. They either meant one or the other, and therefore, in contemporary times, we have a hard time applying Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. So that's one limitation on this principle. However, there's another limitation as well. And that is, based on the comment of the Rambam over here, Os Chaf Beis, the Rambam tells us that when a later Beis Din is only permitted to disagree with an earlier Beis Din with regards to a Din Midrabanan, you know, legislating enactments, if they're Gavo Mimenu B'Chachma Uvaminyan, if they're greater than them in number and in wisdom, then they could overturn a previous Din Midrabanan. But when it comes to developing or arguing on the merits of a Din Midoraisa, and the development of halacha with regards to applying the Yud Gimel Mido Shaton addresses for him, a later Beis Din, even if they're not greater in number and wisdom, can disagree with a previous Beis Din. Of course, this is based on the pasuk in Parshas Shoftim, Uvasel HaShofet Asher Yiyeh Bayamim Ahem. If a person is not sure what the halacha is, he should come to the Shofet who lives in that generation. And the Gemara comments that Yiftach Bedaro, Kishmuel Bedaro, a later generation is comparable to the previous generation, even though the later generation might not be Gadol Mimenu Bechachmu Beminyan as numerous or as wise. They still have the ability to disagree with the previous generation, and they have the legitimacy to do so. So, based on that, the Kesef Mishnah asks a fundamental question. So, if that's the case, why is it so axiomatic in Gemara learning that an Amora, someone who appears in the Gemara, cannot disagree with an opinion that appears in a Mishnah? If later generations can disagree with earlier generations, even if they're not as numerous or as wise, why is it that it's taken as, you know, it's the basic of all Gemara learning is that an Amora, the Rabbanim who appear in the Gemara, cannot disagree with those who appear in the Mishnah? Why not? So Kesef Mishnah actually says that this was self-imposed. They could. But it was self-imposed. We imposed a limitation on disagreements. They Amoraim accepted upon themselves not to disagree with the opinions that appear in the Mishnayos. Even though they had grounds to do so, it was a self-imposed restriction. However, Rabbi Chanan writes over here, Os Chavdalin, the second to the last source, the same appears in the letters of the Chazon Ish, that this was not only a self-imposed restriction, there is a reason why they could not disagree with earlier generations. And perhaps that's the reason why they said, that's what the Kesef Mishnah really means, they self-imposed this restriction because they understood this principle. And that is that in order for a machlokas to exist, the two parties who are having the dispute have to be on equal footing. They have to be in the same league, or to, you know, from a baseball reference, or perhaps a boxing reference, they have to be in the same weight class. If they're not on equal footing, so then a disagreement can't begin. Because the whole premise of disagreements is that I understood what you said, and I counter it with a different argument. But if you're speaking one language, and I'm speaking another language, we can yell at each other. But that won't be a disagreement about an issue, about a principle. Because you don't understand what I'm saying, and I can't understand what you're saying. The premise of all disagreements, I understood what you said, and this is my perspective. However, in order to do that, I have to have understood what you said. But sometimes there's such a precipitous drop in wisdom and understanding of the Torah and the mitzvahs that we can no longer fathom or recognize or figure out how an earlier authority arrived at that position in the first place. And therefore, since we don't understand their greater perspective and how they arrived at this conclusion, we have no legitimacy, we have no right to disagree. We're not in the same weight class. We're not in the same league. We're not a bar plugta, if you will, of the earlier generations. In fact, Rav Moshe, when he wrote the Igros Moshe, was attacked by a Sadmer Talmud Chacham named Rav Yom Tov Schwartz, who wrote what he called Rav Moshe Sefer, was the Igros Moshe, the letters of Moshe. He wrote a Mano LeIgros, the answer to the letters. And he goes through, he picks apart the first few volumes of the Igros Moshe. He picks apart the Tshuvas of Rav Moshe, and he attacks Rav Moshe. Who are you to disagree with these earlier authorities who disagreed with what you said? He brings different sources against, you know, to contradict Rav Moshe's conclusions. And he says, and who are you to disagree with them? This is established precedent. Rav Moshe responds, he didn't have to respond, but Rav Moshe responds in the introduction to one of the volumes of the Igros Moshe, and he explains, and he says that, you know, Rav Moshe says, obviously, he doesn't think he's as great as these earlier authorities. Rav Moshe explains that he felt he understood why they arrived at that conclusion, and he felt that he was entitled, therefore, to disagree, based on Uvasa L'Shofet Eshayiyah B'Yamim Mahem, Yiftach B'Doro K'Shmuel B'Doro, even though we're not as great as previous generations, we can disagree. But Rav Moshe at least felt he was in the same weight class, the same league, as those earlier Achronim that were cited who disagreed. But if a person is not in that league, or there is such a precipitous drop that no one anymore, isn't that the same weight class, the same league, then we cannot disagree with earlier generations. And therefore, says Rabbi Chanan, that's why the Amoraim didn't disagree with the Tanoim. Chazon Ish continues, that's why, of course, it's axiomatic, we cannot disagree with anything that appears in the Gemara in contemporary times. As the Gemara says, Ravina v'Ravashi sof hora, Ravina v'Ravashi ended the period of the Gemara, and we cannot disagree with anything that appears there because it was such a precipitous drop-off. After the conclusion of the Gemara, you can no longer disagree anymore. The Mesillas Yesharim gives a mashal to this. If you've ever been to London, I think they have this, and they have it in Paris also, in Versailles, a maze of hedges. And the royals created these things, so when their guests arrived, they'd have them walk through the maze of hedges to get to the front gate, and they would sit perched on their balcony and be amused by people running back and forth and trying to find their way into the house. That was their amusement. However, the Mesillas Yesharim says that sometimes, this can perhaps represent our search for the Ribono Shel Olam. And some of us are in the maze, and we don't know which way will take us to the goal, to the door of the Ribono Shel Olam, to get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, there are some, though, who have greater perspective. They are sitting high up on a perch, and they can look out onto what's taking place, and they see clearly the path to the Ribono Shel Olam. And says Mesillas Yesharim, that sometimes we have greater leaders with sometimes a much greater level of understanding, and therefore they know, you know, intuitively what is the right way to get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, someone in the maze, even if he has a magnifying glass, you know, looking at one of the leaves, won't know how necessarily to get to the end, to get to the goal, to find his way out. But someone of greater stature might have greater perspective. So it's fundamental to the application of Elu v'Elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim, is that both parties to this dispute are on equal footing. And perhaps that was the distinction between Korach and Moshe as opposed to Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai were bar plukta. They were contemporaries, both legitimate perspectives in applying the Yugim Omido Shaton Adreshus Bohem, and therefore we apply the principle Elu v'Elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim, and that machlokas persists. It's so for this kind because there's truth to both perspectives. However, the machlokas of Korach and Moshe, machlokas that's not l'shem shamayim, is not so for l'hiskayim. We don't apply Elu v'Elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim, because they were not on equal footing. And this is the approach that's suggested by the Abarbanel in his comments on Masechtas Avos, that's why the machlokas between Korach and Moshe was different. And perhaps that's why, get back to one of the other questions we raised, why is it that Moshe's name doesn't appear here in the Mishnah? Just like Hillel and Shammai, both parties to the dispute appear. The second part of the Mishnah, it's only Korach v'Adaso, Korach and his followers. And Moshe is not mentioned because they were not on equal footing. Korach was disagreeing with his Rebbe. He had no right to do so. And therefore, since they were not on equal footing, Korach didn't even understand how Moshe Rabbeinu arrived at his conclusions. He had no right to disagree, and therefore wasn't a dispute between Korach and Moshe, because they weren't of equal status and standing, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu's name doesn't even appear in the Mishnah. Now, even though, of course, we're standing in, we're close to Philadelphia, or Independence Hall, where Thomas Jefferson, you know, composed those famous words that all men are created equal, which Lord Asser mentioned a few minutes ago. All men are created equal, but all rabbis are certainly, or we could use your more politically correct formulation, are not all as equal as one another, but certainly are not not created equal. There is this hierarchy that exists, and it's critical to the development of halacha. And part of Korach's problem was he didn't have this kind of self-awareness to know where he fit in. And the Medrash tells us at the beginning of Parashas Vayikra, "Kol Talmud Chacham she'ein bo das," any Talmud Chacham who doesn't have self-awareness, "Nevei lo tov ayemenu," so then a dead carcass is better than him. Why is that compared to a dead carcass, someone who doesn't have self-awareness? So Chedusha Harim explains, because someone who doesn't have self-awareness, a dead carcass, we can all see right away, you know, that it's a dead carcass. It smells, it's obvious that it's rotten, and we should stay away from it. But a person who doesn't have self-awareness, particularly if he's a Talmud Chacham, so he doesn't recognize his place in the hierarchy, that can be confusing. Not everybody recognizes, well, who belongs, place in this hierarchy, and that can be confusing to other people. And sometimes we have, even in contemporary times, machloksin that develop that are really from two different individuals at two different places in this hierarchy, and it's not apparently obvious to everyone who's involved who's at what position. So in that sense, a Talmud Chacham Shein Bo Das is worse than an Aveila, because it's not obvious to everyone. And that was Korach's shortcoming, is he didn't have that kind of self-awareness to recognize that he was not entitled in the first place to disagree with Moshe Rabbeinu. But it seems that Korach disagreed, was not only lacking in self-awareness, but he disagreed fundamentally with having such a hierarchy in the first place. Rashi tells us that Korach made two primary arguments to Moshe Rabbeinu. He presented him with a garment that was made entirely out of tcheles, and he asked him, does it require additional strings on the corners? Then he presented him with a house that was full of Sifrei Torah, does it require mezuzah on the door? And each time Moshe Rabbeinu responded in the affirmative, but it does. The garment made out of tcheles requires tzitzis. The garment, the house that's full of Sifrei Torah requires a mezuzah. And Korach mocked him. Why should a house, garment that's full of tcheles need a few extra strings on the corner? Why should a house that's full of Sifrei Torah require a mezuzah? However, the Maral explains that Korach was making one fundamental argument, but he gave two examples, one corresponding to Moshe, one corresponding to Aaron. And his argument was that Kol Ha'eder Kulam Kedoshim. We don't need this hierarchy. Let everyone have a direct relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We don't need to have leaders to which we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let everyone relate directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The whole garment is made out of tcheles. The whole house is full of Sifrei Torah. Why do we need the tzitzis on the corner? Why do we need the mezuzah on the door? And Korach, I believe, was making a basic mistake. He understood that this hierarchy represents what is more beloved or what is more important in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's not the case at all. In fact, in Parshas Baloscha, when the Leviim are appointed, are installed to do the service in the Beis HaMikdash, so Rashi already notes that the words B'nei Yisrael appears five times in that Pasuk. In the Pasuk where the Leviim are appointed to do the service, so the words B'nei Yisrael appears five times. Rashi writes that it's in order to teach us Hashem loves B'nai Yisrael as much as He loves the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And that's why the B'nai Yisrael's name appears five times in that passage. It's wonderful for the Ribbono Shel Olam to profess His love for B'nai Yisrael, but why does it have to appear in the very Pasuk where the Leviim are appointed to do the service, to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash? So the Kedushas Levi, the Berditchever, explains that it's because one should not make the mistake of thinking that the Leviim who do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash are more important or more beloved in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's not the case at all. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves all of Klal Yisrael just the same. We all have the same relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why then do we need to have this kind of hierarchy, some who are singled out to perform the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash and not others? And I believe that it's in order to inspire each one of us to do more than we're currently doing, to grow in our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We had in last week's parasha, the about the pasuk states in connection to the mitzvah of tzitzis, where we eat them also, uschartim is kol mitzvos Hashem. We'll see the tzitzis, and we're reminded of all of the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How does that work? So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Menachos, because the color of the tcheles, kind of a bluish color, which was dome le-yam, similar in color to the sea. The yam, the sea, is similar in color to the rakia, to the sky. And the rakia is reminiscent, similar to the kisei hakoven. So by looking at the tzitzis, that reminds us of the sea, which reminds us of the sky, which reminds us of the kisei hakoven, and remember all of the mitzvahs of Hashem by looking at the tzitzis. But why do we need this kind of progression? Why can't we have, you know, let's just have the tcheles remind us of the kisei hakoven. What's with all these, you know, this reminds us of that, which reminds us of this, the chagadia. Let's just go straight to the kisei hakoven. So Moshe explains in the Drash Moshe that it's in order to teach us that ruchnius, growth in spirituality, comes in stages. And every person, whatever stage they're at, needs someone of greater kedusha, who they're looking up to, and they're inspired by, to encourage them to dedicate themselves to a greater degree to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, Klal Yisrael has the Kohanim, we look up to the Kohanim. The Kohanim would have the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol would be the only one to enter into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and interact with the Luchos. Everybody has something, whatever Madrega they're at, that they're looking up to, that inspires them, that kind of role model of a person who's dedicated his life to a greater degree to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's necessary in order for us to continue to grow, to come closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, it's incumbent upon each one of us, whatever Madrega a person is at, to look for those kinds of role models. Baruch Hashem, Zeichet, have a wonderful Mara D'Asra, and leaders in the community. But every person should continue to try and find those role models for themselves as they continue to grow and come closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam, to inspire them to even do more, to even dedicate ourselves to a greater degree to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And at the same time, we also have a responsibility to have self-awareness, to recognize, which Karach seemed to have failed in, that perhaps we are somewhere in that hierarchy as role models to others, whether it's our children, to other members of the community, and that comes along with a responsibility as well to conduct ourselves in a fashion that not only where we're looking up to others, but to conduct ourselves in a fashion that inspires others as well to continue to grow in their relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. I mean, it's a shame if we do this, but we all continue to grow, to progress from level to level, from Madrega to Madrega, as we, Amir Hashem, all strive in order to come closer to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Thank you for coming.